All right, welcome everybody back to the Motivated by Mortality podcast. I'm here with Christine Harris, all the way from Berkeley, California. I don't know if you're a Warriors fan, but I put on this Lakers jersey just for you because you're from Cali. So I'm like, yes, Lakers? Yes.
No, I'm a Warriors fan.
All right, well, Kobe, because you cannot hate him.
Diehard Warriors fan.
Diehard. Okay, well, you know, it's not like y'all had
back-to-back-to-back championships.
Right. I mean, you know, you can win back-to-back championships when you have and all the other gods, one team, you know. But anyway, no, I'm with Christine Harris. I've known Christine for, about 4 or 5 years now, tangentially through the activity that we both did in high school. We were both nationally competitive debaters. We both were pretty decent at our shit. And now we are in a different stage of our life where she's 21, I'm 22, and we are trying to do something else a little bit outside of the box, a little bit more creative, and just a little bit more like trying to chase down some dream type shit. So excited to talk to her. So Christine, can you just tell us like, what, if I were to ask you right now, like, what are you trying to do with your life at 21? How would you answer that?
I think I have a pretty good idea, even from a younger standpoint. I mean, we were talking a little bit earlier, but when I got into college, I'm the first person in my family to go to college, let alone the number one public university in the world. But more so to that, I had come into undergrad thinking that I was going to have a set plan. I was going to major in political science. I was going to graduate. I was going to go into the public sector and basically do good in the world. That is still a passion of mine. I'm still very passionate about politics and helping my community. But I also found that I also had other aspirations, and I'm very young and I have the ability to expand my horizons. So from that, I decided to switch my major. I'm actually a rhetoric major at Cal. Don't ask me what that is. I don't know. It's quite a lot. And I'm minoring in public policy, and I think that gave me a better balance as to, you know, what I like to do with my passions and my hobbies, but also giving me some freedom to do what I'm good at, which is writing. So from that, I have now ventured off to being a fictional author or a fiction author. So I'm currently writing various projects to narrow down what my debut novel is going to be. I'm a young adult fantasy writer. So that's kind of the category that I'm writing in. But I'm also very active in my community. Here at Cal, I'm a part of multiple organizations, especially for the Black community. I'm Black and Asian, and that's very much what I'm passionate about. And given the climate of our world, and, you know, not our world right now, it's always been anti-Black, but just given everything that's been going on right now, that's kind of where my focal point is. But also balancing how I can help as a writer, but also, you know, a student and advocate and in various forms and networks is kind of my plan as I move forward.
Okay. So I want to dissect this into a couple things. I want to talk about the social thing in a second, but before we get there, so a fiction author, right? So that's such an interesting idea to me, because at 21, you've decided that at least as of now, the path for your life, the trajectory of your life is going to be around creating stories out of ideas that are in your head based upon experiences that you've had, and trying to articulate those stories through a medium of communication, which is writing, in a way that actually impacts people enough for them to buy your book, read your book, and like genuinely form an audience and a connection with you. That's something I'm really interested for. Why do you think that's a good thing to do? Like, what excites you and motivates you about like making stories and trying to get people in the world to listen to them?
Yeah, people always ask me this question because they're like, Christine, you read so many books. Like, and that's true, but I've always been like that, and I never saw it as anything different. From a very young age, I was always reading. That was the only way that I could kind of make it through the day. That sounds really dramatic, but I mean, I came from East Oakland. It's not the very best neighborhoods, you know, and as a young kid, my family was always pushing me towards, you know, academics and getting me involved in things. And so my thing from, I think, the age of like 10, probably, I was asking my mom to take me to the library, and I would check out books upon books upon books. And so I was just reading fiction all the time, and that kind of gave me an escape as to, you know, all the things that were going on in my life, my family and stuff, and gave me, you know, an alternate universe to enter in that I didn't have to, you know, focus on for those moments when I'm reading those pages.
Right.
And obviously once I got to high school, that kind of fell off because I was in high school and I was, you know, preparing for the next stages of my life. But once I got to college and I had more freedom and, you know, learned how to balance things more, I was like, no, I need to get back to reading. Like, and fiction specifically, because I think as a student, we're always just reading textbooks or whatever books that our professors give us, or, you know, academic journals and stuff like that, which are all great. But I just feel like there's nothing like a good fiction book to, like, escape your reality and just, you know, engage in multiple different stories. So that's kind of my background as to why I decided to take this route. And it's interesting that you ask, like, the kind of audience component of why I want to do this, because it is kind of scary, like, being a writer and an author, because I, as a reader, I feel like I'm so attached to a lot of books. I have so many favorites. I have so many different worlds. And because I love reading fantasy particularly, it's like, none of that is real, you know, like, none of that is in real life.
Right.
And so making a story that's like captivating and fantastical, but also being able to balance that with realistic, you know, emotions and realistic characters that you can relate to is also important, because that's, you know, I like talk about characters in books like they're like my actual friends, you know, like I love and hate them.
On your imaginary friend shit.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not gonna lie, bro. I remember when someone introduced the concept of an imaginary friend to me, it was like 2005 or some shit. I started making a bunch of these. And then you start watching Foster's Home for imaginary kids. Shit. You're like, oh, imaginary friend. Then you're like, yo, I don't want to be a loser. I need to like get a real friend. But no, that's so real. So like when it comes to telling stories, what do you think really inspires you in order to get an idea for a story? So I know you're working on a debut novel right now, and you don't have to tell us too many details about that, but like, is there stuff that's happened in the past that's just like, I have to tell the world about this through fiction in order for me to die peacefully?
Yeah. And that's so crazy that you like weave that in, because that's kind of, so I guess I'll start with the first portion. The way that I think I tell my stories and a lot of the writing that I have incorporates a lot of personal experiences. And I think that goes for any and all books. Anybody, and stories.
Yep. Any story.
Yeah, exactly. It's personal. Growing up, I had a lot of negative experiences and very different, you know, aspects in my life. And the reason why I started even changing my major and getting into this was actually after my dad had passed away. He had passed away the fall semester of my sophomore year. So it's about to be 2 years now, which is even crazy to say, but motivated by mortality, it was literally that, just like the framework in saying that, you know, do whatever makes you happy, like do whatever you want to do and put out into this world is something that was really important to him. And I hadn't digested that, you know, as a young person. But now when I'm thinking out into the world and like thinking ahead, and I'm like, you know, I could also have, you know, these things, like I'm his child, you know, there's, there's diabetes, high cholesterol. These are all things that I also have to worry about now. And, you know, struggling with anxiety and depression, it's like all of these things are a lot. And I just don't, and honestly, even absent of that, you never know when your life is going to end. You know, it could end tomorrow and you'd
be in a helicopter.
Exactly. Exactly. And so it's just that motivation for me to just do what I love and put something out there that can last forever. You know, the idea of putting my name into something that I worked really hard on, that I want to present as a story to engage and connect with people that I may never know in my lifetime, and this can expand beyond my life, is something that is just so cool to me. And like, cool is such a reductionary word, but like,
it's hard to put it into words, right?
Yeah, it's like, I Sorry, the sirens.
No, it's all right. You're good.
But it's just crazy, like, being able to see, like, we read Mark Twain and, like, stories like that. It's like their names are lasting forever. The fact that I may one day be that author to someone, just even one person, like, I just think it's so dope and a big responsibility that I'm willing to take on.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like, you know, when we talk about motivated by mortality, for me, in the context of like the things I do, which is like public speaking and debating and stuff like that, one of the big things for me is like, what is the intersection between like speaking and death, or storytelling and death? And for me, you know, like at a young age, just like you, we started having these like existential crises, which is like, the fuck am I doing here? Like, what is the point of any of this? Why are we waking up every morning? Why are we trying to achieve something? What is the point of connecting with people? And it seems to me like when you said cool and that's reductionary, it's not even reductionary, because it's like communication is the only thing. Forget cool. There is no other option other than finding your way and your medium of communication and figuring out how to connect with other people. Because then other than that, you're just telling stories to yourself and looking at the ceiling. And it's like, there's a little bit less beauty in that versus figuring out how to become immortal like a Mark Twain, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting to talk about too, because I don't think we could ever encapsulate these things and ideas in words itself, because right. Unless you go through an experience that's so traumatic where you think, you know, you're at a point where you think you may lose your life, or like you see someone that you love or is really close to lose their life, I don't think you will ever know the feeling of what it means to be fearful of death. And it's also interesting on a religious standpoint, because, you know, I read the Bible, and it's like, death isn't something you should be fearful of, right? Because there's an afterlife to look forward to. But it's like finding that balance as well is just so intense sometimes.
The afterlife thing is in particular, because I'm not necessarily the most religious, but like the idea that there's nothing else after this really makes you think like, yo, maybe there is, but maybe there's not. And it's like, if there's not, and I got one shot, like, what am I going to say? What am I going to do in this one opportunity to make an impact? And to me, it comes down to like, what are you going to communicate? What stories are you going to share? Right? Like, how are you going to get other people to understand the ideas in your head and form an authentic connection with them? And if you don't do that, then like, that's where I'm wondering, what's the purpose to all of this? Like, what else is there to do at that point?
Yeah, I feel it. And I think when we like talk about public speaking and telling stories in general, it's like there's a component that we're not talking about, which is like an audience or like reaching as many people as we possibly can. And sometimes that even is daunting, because the world is so big and we're not going to reach everyone. Yeah. And as a writer, that's also scary to me. It's like, you know, who is going to read my book? Who's going to pay to read my book? You know? Right. And I think I find those moments a lot, but it's like, I mean, you got to take baby steps, and that's with anything. And I just had to come to terms with the fact that if my story or if something I say could impact one person, I think that's enough. And even if they don't ever tell me that, I think the fact that I'm willing to share these stories is enough for me. That's another thing that I had to keep juggling with, because just growing up, you know, where I grow up and the community that I come from, you know, I don't live in an affluent city or neighborhood. I didn't come from a family with a lot of money.
Yeah.
I grew up at a young age seeing my friends die, right? It's stories like that that a lot of people just can't relate to. And it's like and it's another thing too. It's like, I can't bear this responsibility of continuously talking and telling these stories by myself, or like every conversation or every interaction that I have to tell this story. And I think that's why I default to fiction, or I really love fiction. It's because I can weave in, you know, some of those experiences, but also, you know, make it more fantastical, make it a little better than, you know, what the world is and how it is and how it operates and exists right now. But
it kind of highlights the absurdity of the universe in the context of social, economic, racial issues, and just how tragic it can become for particular groups of individuals. How in order for you to feel that there's a meaningful reason to stay alive, you have to fictionalize and find a reality that you can escape to, but still weave in the themes of what's going on in this absurd universe in a more digestible way, just for it to, you know, kind of make sense. It really highlights the insaneness of the universe, you know?
Yeah, literally the perfect word, insaneness of the universe.
I don't know if is insaneness a word? I don't know. Yo, one of my favorite words is called Byzantine. Have you ever heard of this shit?
Byzantine. I don't know why it sounds familiar, but I don't know the context. What is it?
So it means, like when I was, you know, studying for the SAT and all that shit, like you had to learn all these words. And it was the first word because it was B, right? So it was in the beginning of the dictionary. And it was like Byzantine. I'm like, what the fuck does this mean? And it means intricate and complex. And I'm like, yo, that is the most interesting way to say that something is complex. But I call it Byzantine. I was saying that for like 4 years, and then someone called it Byzantine.
I heard Byzantine.
So I was right, and the person who corrected me was fucking wrong. Because I'm just thinking, like, yo, like, imagine you're walking around and you're like, damn, the clouds are fucking Byzantine today. Like, I feel like people would think that guy's a douchebag. But no, that I wanted to ask you about the creative process. So you said even if one person reads my story, it's meaningful. So I want to ask you, what's the balance between this? Because right now you're trying to build a personal brand, you're doing a lot of social media, and we'll get into that in a second, but you're trying to build an audience. So obviously you care, just like everyone cares, and everyone's lying if they say they don't care, about other people giving them attention for the creative shit they put out there. You're not going to get all 8 billion, but you got to get some. Now, my question is, if there was zero people watching for a long time, zero people reading for a long time, would the motivation still be there so that one day if someone finally watches, then I at least put in the effort to make that much of an impact, even if it was hard to deal with the fact that no one was caring in the beginning?
Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting because I don't think I relied on that until now, or like backing up when I was younger and when I was reading. So this is probably like 6th, 7th grade. I was already writing, like I was writing book reviews and I was writing, you know, my emotions in a diary or a journal about the books that I was reading, because that was the only outlet that I could express myself. And then I would also in turn still make up stories myself. Like it would be like short stories, a couple pages of just things that I wanted to write about.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, I'm like 10, 12. I don't know what marketing is. I don't know what a brand, like building a brand is. I was just writing because that was just the way that I was expressing myself. And I think that continues to today as a writer. Like there are so many drafts that I have that I don't even want to put out into the world. These are just like stories that I want to keep for myself. And so I think the motivation and that is still, you know, my love for writing. But you're right. Like it's not realistic to say that I don't want other people to read it. And so I think in turn building this brand and building myself as a writer, or like even saying that I'm a writer and I'm about to debut a novel one day, has a certain characteristic where I build interest in people to one day read my work. But I still think that there's a balance or like a creative aspect. And I think it's very much specific for this industry. I don't think if you were asking me about like any business avenue, I would have a totally different answer. But because being an author, you have so many creative freedoms in terms of like whether or not you want to write in a certain genre, or whether or not you want to self-publish versus go to a publishing company, right? I think nowadays you have so much freedom in terms of the creative aspects and ownership that you have. And so I think I would say both. Like I just love writing and I'll write regardless, but on the other hand, I do, you know, a story that I do want to share, I have to have an audience to read my work.
Yeah, it's a really interesting balance between like, because again, like if you're doing a business, like you need to make a profit. So you have to have customers. You
can't
be like, oh, one day, like, no, like you're gonna go out of business.
Yeah.
But like creativity is different because, And this for me with public speaking, like what I do for my creative process, I write speeches that are to like 10 to 12 minutes out of any experience I get. Like if an experience motivates me, usually when I'm walking or running, I start thinking about it and I start crafting and narrating a story in my head that would turn into a speech. For you, it's the same with like your writing and stuff. And for me, it's like, yo, this idea is so profound to me that I have to figure it out and I have to record it and put it out into the universe. And if no one watches it, like I'm gonna live with it. I'm gonna try to market it really hard so that people watch it because I want that connection. I think the idea can impact them as well in some capacity. But the idea is like stuck in my head, right? So like one example was yesterday I was at a restaurant and you know, at a restaurant or like a fast food joint and you can do mobile pickup before you go to pick up your food. So while you drive, it'll be ready. So I did that. And then when you get there, you're supposed to say, I'm here, right? So I said, I'm here. And then I got out, I went to the front of the line and it was like 20 minutes later. And it's like, they just didn't get my food. And all these other people were coming in front of me. I'm like, what the fuck? How many people, like, what is going on? And then the guy next to me, he was just like, yeah, like I've been here for a while too. And I'm like, this is crazy. And he was like, well, you know what they did when they were at home? They probably already said, I'm here, so that the cook started making their food earlier. And then they just drove over so that as soon as they came, like they didn't play by the rules. Right.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I was like, damn, I guess we got to start doing the same thing. And he was like, if that's the game. And right then and there, when he said those four words, if that's the game, I was immediately impacted by that. And I was like, yo, this is a speech. I can turn this idea into a speech. Because I was like, huh, if that's the game is such a profound idea, because the metaphorical symbolism behind those four words is that humans will compete with other humans and find little tricks and cheats to get across the system and not do the most ethical and honest thing in order to achieve the maximum efficiency and productivity, like by saving 20 minutes in order to get them through the day. That's a profound idea. And I want to bridge that over and bring it into something like greater. So like little shit like that, that happens at a restaurant to me gets me thinking like, yo, this needs to become an idea. This needs to become a speech. Now, no one may care about that shit. But I need to figure out how to make it into something and put it out into the universe that's meaningful for me because it's creative. And I think that's the same what you're saying with stories, like all those drafts that you have, like it's meaningful to you. And one day you may put it out just because you had to put it out for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so cool too, because I think our creative process is similar in that it's like very random and sporadic. Right. And that's just the beauty of it too. I mean, I mentioned earlier that after I graduate, I want to go get my MBA, which is very different world, very different realm, and just ideals of thinking compared to, you know, this route of going to become an author. And I just think it's so dope that I have the ability to just like weave in so many different things into one idea or like one story. And it's so dope that you share that too, because all stories have to relate, or like all stories are based off of personal experience. We already said that, but also it's like the connectivity part is important, because whenever we think about these profound ideas or like these ideas that are so cool or unique to us, I just don't think that it's always new, right? Yeah. Like someone else has already thought about this.
Yep.
And someone else may not have completed this idea. So just the ability to like formulate a clear understanding of like what you think a story is or what story you want to tell, and then sharing it, and then have, you know, that one person who's randomly like, oh, wow, I had this experience when I was at Chuck E. Cheese. Like, let's expand on that. Just like that component of interconnectedness that communication, I think, in general allows us to have, and just like allows humans to have some relationability towards one another, is just super cool to me.
That relationability saves us from nihilism, right? And for those who are listening, nihilism is just like you feel like there's no meaning to life. It's like you got to, like, if you've ever seen I Am Legend, like he's just like, he's alone in the world. Like, it's like you have to have some type of connection with other people. And I think what you're saying about storytelling, having some level of relatability, is important, especially in the context of just like when you think about religion, right? You have a couple of major religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. And then there's others, obviously Hinduism, Buddhism. Like, they have really, the story is so relatable that billions of people are like, we believe in this. And that to me is pretty insane, right? We've been around for thousands of years. So you're likely not going to think of some brand new idea unless you're like really prophesizing shit. But you can take ideas and originally communicate them in your own way. And then if you can connect them to people, you know, you can create your own kind of mini religion in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing that I just love too, and love talking about, and partially why I'm a rhetoric major, is just like the power that words have and the power that just like linguistic has overall. Yeah. Yep. Is just such an interesting concept to me. Like the fact that if I say like one thing, it could totally be interpreted differently by you. And that's just based on your past experiences, what you know, like how you know it. And I just think that's an also really difficult concept, or maybe I'm just overthinking it. But whenever I'm writing a story, I like think about, you know, when I'm creating character dialogue, just like what voice a person has is also very interesting and something that I love about the writing process and about writing just fiction in general, because you literally have to create characters from scratch. And in order to do that, you have to have relations to other people and many different people. And I think, you know, our background in debate, I was exposed to so many different people from so many different areas, states, personalities, interests, and I was able to kind of digest that. And when I was writing and, you know, realized that, I was like, damn, I know a lot of people, and a lot of my network and my friend group are so different.
Yeah.
And I can say I probably have a friend or, you know, someone that I know in almost all different fields. So I can range from, you know, creative writers to lawyers, or like politicians to like business owners. And even though everyone's so different, there's like still some commonality within my network, which I think is also very interesting. But yeah, I just wanted to note that, because I hadn't like realized that for a long time. And when I was writing one of my recent drafts, I was creating a character that was like very nonchalant, very standoffish, was not likable, like not supposed to be a likable character. I was like, I can't really write this because I don't know someone that's like that in my friend group, you know. But then I'm like reflecting on all my years, I'm like, I kind of know someone that could fit description. Right? So you're like incorporating some different personalities from the people that you've met, or like people that you see. I think one character of mine is based off this dad that I met at Chuck E. Cheese when I was bringing my little brother there. This was years ago, like years ago.
I love that, because that shit that is like, that shit is gold, because when it comes back later, you're like, oh shit, this means something.
Yeah. And I remember I was writing this character and he's like a father figure, so not actually a dad. And at the time at Chuck E. Cheese, when I was like, I don't know, probably 13 or something, I had witnessed this dad yell at his kid for like putting in the tickets to the, you know, thing that counts all the tickets at the end.
Yeah.
He was putting it in too early and he was yelling at his kid. And so I was, and so I don't know why I came across or like thought of that when writing this character. But then the situation was like totally different too. But it's like moments like that where it's like totally random. I would have never thought about that scene or like that experience ever if I hadn't been writing or thinking about this character. It's just so exciting to me when writing anything, because it forces me to reflect and remember. And that's another thing, while we're on the topic of like mortality and stuff, it's like my worst fear is not remembering. Like I have a fundamental fear of growing old and not remembering any of the experiences.
Why do you have that fear?
It's because it's like I feel like if I ever reach that point, it's like, who am I, you know? And it's like scary. And obviously, you know, there are people who do end up suffering from memory loss and stuff like that. And I'm just like, I like dread the idea that I would be in that position and like look at, you know, someone that I love's face and not remember them, or like not remember anything. Like that just terrifies me. And vice versa, like being the other end of that, I just think it's so scary. And so that's the other reason why I really like writing. It's because, you know, even if I forget one day, the fact that I can have a physical book in my hand and like have my name there, if I, you know, even if I forget my name,
yeah,
I just don't know. I don't know if I'm thinking about it too much, but yeah, no, that's another thing that I was thinking about.
I don't think you're thinking about it too much. I think you're doing what most people don't fucking do, which is think. I think you're thinking, which is the Alzheimer's dilemma that you're talking about. It's an existential dilemma, because the argument is like, when you're 80 years old and you can't recall upon the experiences that made you who you are, you lose a sense of yourself. And to me, that's why the storytelling communication shit is so important, because that's why I loved when you brought up this random thing about this guy yelling at his kid for putting the tickets in the Chuck E. Cheese thing. Like, that experience had a effect on you in the depths of your subconscious, and you brought it back. And if you don't, and this is not for you, this is for in general, if people don't reflect and remember the things that have happened in their life and then tell stories about those things that have happened, then it's like those things never even happened, right? It's kind of like you had a relationship when you were like 17 to 19, right? It was a really good, I'm not saying you, but anybody, you had a relationship, and then you're like 27. Like, the only way you remember what happened from 17 to 19, 10 years ago, is telling stories about that later based upon your ability to reflect and then talk about those things to make it come back to life, because the past is the past. But if you never talked about it, you don't have any ways to remember it. Like, did it even happen? And that's a really big question when you get to the end of your life. It's like, if I never told stories about the shit I was doing or somehow communicated that shit to the world, did I even do it? Because at the end of the day, if I die, like, we're going to forget about Michael Jackson one day. Like, one day, in 2,000 years, like, one day.
Yes. Which is so...
We're not Michael Jackson, so we're all getting forgotten.
Yeah, for sure. That's so interesting, because a concept that I always kind of come back and fall onto is the fact that, when I was younger, my friend passed away, and I remember being at the funeral when I was, like, 12, and... I think it was his older sister who had made a speech, and she was like, you know, he's like dead, you know, right now, like in this moment, he's dead. He's gone from our lives, but he dies a second time when no one on this world says his name again.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I was trying to weave in earlier. Like, the fact that I could put my name onto something and it like transcend forever, like my name can be said, you know, maybe years from now, like years after I'm passed, is just bizarre to me. Cause it's like, obviously we're all gonna die, but like the fact that you might live on, like the memories of so many celebrities that we know, or like people that are close to us, that we can say their names past their death, is just something that's so powerful to me. And yeah.
This is where we'll transition a little to the social stuff. It's kind of like the whole Say Her Name campaign, right?
Yeah.
This person died, and like, if we do not repeat their name in some capacity, then the justice for their death that was unequivocally achieved, it goes away, and there's no material standard for that. So from a social perspective, how do you think your writing and art relates back to a lot of your, a lot of the experiences you've had from a biracial perspective, all those different things?
Mm-hmm. I think one word that narrows down just like me, my brand, what I'm about, is just very intentional. I'm a very intentional person, and everything that I do has a purpose, or, you know, so at some capacity, a mission to accomplish something.
Right.
And with my brand, it's called Editorial Edge, and just everything that surrounds me and my work just has to be in the frame of like doing something to better my community. So with what I've been doing so far on my YouTube channel and on my blog, is that I created the Editorial Edge Black Fiction Directory. That's like one of the ways that I've kind of, I don't want to say capitalized, but kind of capitalized on, you know, what everything is going on at the moment, and created a list and directory of all the Black authors within fiction. And organized all the books within genres, from children's books to adult books. And so I opened it to the public. So if anyone ever needs, you know, recommendations for books from Black authors, because in the industry alone, within like the fiction industry, only 5% are Black authors. Yeah. And that's bizarre to think about, because there are millions of books out there. And so I knew that, you know, prior to being a writer, but I just don't think a lot of people just know that in terms of, you know, books that are being written, especially within fiction, because like you said, like at a young age, when we grow up in communities, like the community we grow up in, it's like, oh, if you're reading all the time, you're a nerd. Or like, if you read, you know, these type of books, like it's weird. Or, but even now, like as a grown adult reading these books, people are like, how are you reading these books? You know, why do you read so much? Right. It's like frowned upon.
Right.
And it's crazy to think. And that's kind of the purpose and like why I wanted to take this route as well, is because like, especially in the Black community, it's so frowned upon. And the fact that, you know, a lot of Black children don't read past the reading level of the fifth grade still to this day is just bizarre to me. And the fact that it's still, that disparity still exists despite so many programs that we have.
And there's a lot of structural inequities that cause that, right? Because that's not the same for a lot of other races. And that's a, that's a intentional attempt on governmental bodies to not fix that problem because they don't care about
it. It's like in the neighborhood that I lived in, we didn't have a public library that was just down the street from me. I had to go a whole, like, I had to get on the freeway, pass a whole bunch of other cities in order to get to the closest library to me,
right?
Or at my schools, and just in general, the books that are available within any genre, the main characters or like the main protagonists are white, especially in the genre that I'm writing, which is young adult fantasy. All, like, literally, I kid you not, it's like 98% of the main characters or protagonists or books are white.
No, I believe it. It's all the shit we read in high school, like How to Kill a Mockingbird and Julius Caesar and all this stuff.
Exactly. And then you think about all the books that are written by or Black, about Black people. It's like racism.
Yeah.
And so it's like the world thinks that all, like, any books associated with Black people are just about racism.
Right.
And that's
a horrible generalization because it limits the creative pursuit of Black people, right?
Exactly. That's why when I created that directory, people were so surprised. They were like, wow, like, I didn't even know, you know, these many books that were out. I'm like, this is only 100. Like, these are only 100 books that I researched within a day. Like, it was like a day's work.
Right.
And there are so many more. So I continually update it bi-weekly because I just can't do it every single day. But I'm like, and it doesn't take that long. It's like, it doesn't require a lot of work. And so, but that's the thing. A lot of these things, you know, when it comes to just social activism or just, you know, reading or researching, a lot of people just don't want to do it. And I think I've learned that from a very young age, just like, even in debate, like, people didn't want to go cut cards, if no one knows what that is. Right, like, cutting cards is just like the evidence that you used in order to back up your arguments. But no one wanted to do that. It's like someone else had to just formulate all these things for you, and then you're like, oh, let me scroll past it, right? And it's the same today, or with anything. Like, even in school, people don't want to do the extra work if they don't have to, right? You just do whatever's in front of you. And so,
how do you stay focused on reading? Because in a world in which our attention spans go in a second, we can switch from Instagram to Facebook to YouTube. Like, how do you actually sit down, I'm assuming like every day or every week, and actually read a book?
Yeah, it's honestly, it's still difficult. People are like, oh, you just like read for fun, whatever. But it's like difficult to discipline yourself and just like commit to reading for hours upon hours. Because a lot of the books that I read, they're like 600-700 pages long. And I prefer long books. And like, I could finish that in about 4 hours. But that's a long time.
You can finish 600 pages in 4 hours?
Yeah. And so like, that's still a lot of time to commit. And exactly. See,
like 150 pages per hour.
Yeah.
That is
insane. Yeah, I can definitely read 150 pages per hour, sometimes more. But that's what I'm saying. Like, there's also like a component of privilege that I'm able to have this time to just read for myself as well. And, you know, that's another thing that I just have to recognize, that a lot of the things in like the creative aspects are like creating a brand or being able to read so many books or being able to, you know, get so many physical copies of books is a privilege in and of itself.
Yep,
and absolutely. So, when I like think about those things and like put that in perspective, it's like all difficult. It's like, I feel guilty reading sometimes because it's like other people aren't afforded this time, or other people aren't afforded.
You gotta go to work.
Right, right, exactly. And I think I learned that, and the reason why I'm probably a really fast reader is because I had to deal with that when I was little, right? Like, right. My mom, I would read so much. My mom was like, no, you can only read for an hour. And so I would read so fast that I would finish a book in an hour before my mom would be like, no, go do something else. Because like I said, it was like still frowned upon that I was reading, right? But yeah.
No, the motivation, like, because I did not read for a very long time until summer of 2018. I was just like, I was having that existential crisis. I was like, what the fuck am I trying to do with my life? And that's when I started buying like a ton of just like different books. And I read about 18 to 25 books in 2 months in that summer.
That's a lot.
That was a lot for me. For someone who had not been reading for like 17 in the context of like books every week, to finish that many books was important. And now I don't read as much. Now I'm like building and I have so much other stuff to do. But
yeah,
during the time where I wanted to get an answer and I wanted to get motivated and inspired, I was looking for information and knowledge. I knew it wasn't really going to come through the videos and through podcasts. Like, that's all helpful. But I knew the discipline it would take me to finish 200 pages in a couple of days, not in a couple of hours like Christine, was going to be very difficult. And it was going to test me. And if I could do that, then I could commit to something. I think it is a privilege to be able to have that time to read. But it also is just like, once you have that skill, imagine where you can apply that discipline in other places when you're trying to create something, you know?
Yeah, and I think with a lot of just like creative hobbies or like creative avenues, you have to have some level of discipline, because it is so easy for me to be like, I don't feel like reading today. I don't feel like writing today.
You just don't have to do it, yeah.
You don't have to do it because essentially you're your own boss, you know? Right. And it's like, especially before you even have a book out or like you're even a proclaimed author, like, you don't have to do any of this, you know, like, you're not getting paid for your time. You're not getting paid for anything that you're doing. So it's so easy to say that. But I just think that it's important to, for anyone too. It's like, you have to love what you're doing as well. Like,
yeah,
I think the discipline comes with the love and the passion that I want to do it. And I think that goes for
curiosity to achieve something.
Yeah. And I think that goes along with just like motivating other people to, you know, pick up a book today or like read. It's like, find something that you are actually interested in reading. A lot of people are like, oh, I hate reading, I don't like reading books. It's like, you haven't found a book that you may be interested in.
Like, that's like saying you just hate knowledge. Like, that sounds stupid. Like,
yeah. And it's like, I tutor kids as well, and I tutor them in English. And so a lot of the kids are like, I don't like reading, it's really boring, et cetera, et cetera. I feel it. Like, reading's not for everyone, but it's like, also just don't sell yourself short. There are so many books and genres and ways to read out there. There are graphic novels, there are academic journals, there are comics, you know, there's so many different mediums of reading as well that I think people just don't consider. So they just like group it all into reading and they're like, no, not for me.
Right.
Obviously, not everyone's gonna like reading 700-page books like me. Like, that's not something that's ideal, you know. But right. I just think motivating some like people to just like find something that they like reading.
Because once you get into it, you get it. Like, I remember the last book I really, really liked that was fiction was Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, and I read that shit in 2 days. So I was like, I need to figure out what happened. Yeah. So for you, for 700 pages, like, you probably like, I need to figure out like what's going on like at the end of this book. And you gotta
exactly. And the other thing, it's like, it's okay if you don't like a book, just put it down, return it to the library. You don't have to commit to finishing a book. And I think that also comes with the stigma of like reading. It's like, once you find a book that you don't like, you're like, all books are like this,
right?
Which isn't true. Yeah. Right, like, I've read so many books and a lot of them I don't like, and a lot of them just like live on with me forever. Like, I still have my copy of Percy Jackson, and I'm also like low-key a book collector,
right?
You know, when I'm not broke. So that's like another thing, like something that connects to you and like your passion and I love, it'll stay with you forever. And you know, some of these books that I read back when I was in middle school, like in my prime time of reading.
Yeah.
So that it's like a lot of nostalgia too, like being able to look back and be like, that book made me feel this type of way. And like being able to reread it now, like as an adult, I remember I had just recently reread Twilight, because Stephanie Meyer's coming out with a new book in August. But I'm like, I hadn't read this since God knows when, like, you know.
Twilight changed the world, like that.
Yeah. But like just having moments like that and like being able to transcend time that way. Like I remember when Stephanie Meyer, you know, had her press release saying that she's releasing a new book from the Twilight series. I mean, you have this is over a decade ago, you know, and you still have people who are like, oh my God, Twilight, you know, made me feel this way. Or I remember going to Twilight, like seeing the movies with my friend, like having those moments and then being able to connect with people on that experience alone, I think is another reason why I just like love the book community and like the author community, because it's like, we don't have, you know, we are from so many different walks of life, but like we can relate to our experience or our emotions with one book or, you know, whatever series that we're reading.
And I also think it's what we're trying to do as we get older. Like as we get older and like the reality of the world starts stepping on us a little bit, we're trying to get back some of that innocence and youth, and we literally physically cannot get it back. So like the feelings associated with hearing these songs in 2010 or these books in the 2000s are like, that it's so unbelievably meaningful to have those emotions come back. Because like, if you don't have those emotions come back that are triggered through like a book or a song or a certain food, then you just never get them ever, because time moves on. And like 2010 is not here anymore. It's 2020. And it's important to do that. You said you're not getting paid anymore from, you said you're not getting paid to read books, but you're trying to get paid to read books because you're doing some book reviews online. And if that channel catches some steam, you're going to be making some money from just reading books. Yeah. So YouTube, like walk me through how you're like approaching the content marketing strategy to actually build a book review channel on YouTube.
Yeah. So I guess like a little bit more about me. So I'm a rhetoric major, but my plan after undergrad is to go get my MBA, my business master's, my master's in business. And the reason is because I love marketing, and I think marketing relates to, you know, what we do anyways. It's like being able to connect one thing and sell it to somebody else.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what all our work is, right? Like being able to tell a story and captivate somebody else and bring somebody else in.
It's the creative aspect of business, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So with my brand and just like what my YouTube channel is, the way that I kind of market myself is solely to make content around books. And there's a very large community of we call ourselves booktubers.
Yep.
So YouTubers who do book reviews and talk about books.
Yep.
And I've, in my short time, I think I've only been on YouTube for a month and a half, I've met so many people, and my channel has grown way faster than I ever thought I was. I thought I was gonna have like 100 subscribers max, and I'd be like, okay, and like half of them is my family, because my family's huge, you know. And I thought that was it, but in the month and a half that I've been on YouTube, I now have, I think, over 300 subscribers, and I've connected with hundreds of people on Twitter.
Yep.
And there are also people who are like bookstagrammers, so people who talk and review about books on Instagram. And so it's like this huge network and community of people who just like love to talk about books, period. And so I think that's how I kind of market myself, and like I tap into that network. But in order to, you know, make myself different from everyone else, I also make content, making videos about, you know, my writing experience and like me
just other shit other than books.
Yeah, because it's like another thing, it's like you have to make yourself different from other people somehow, right? That's just how it is, and just that's just how you grow, that you bring something different to the table. But yeah, I think coupled that with my experience, you know, being a college student, being leader, like being a leader on my campus. Sorry, there's a lot of background noise. But just coupling all of those experiences and being able to talk about those instances in context of my like content as well, I think that's kind of what pushed me over the edge. And then just like connecting with whoever is out there as well. Because what I've
go ahead, go ahead. You got it.
Well, I was going to say, like, the main thing that's helping me grow is because other YouTubers or, like, BookTubers are retweeting my stuff, like, retweeting right. my videos. I'm in group chats where they're like, okay, today somebody's going to post a video so we don't conflict with this person who's going to be, like, boosting each other up. And I think that's something that's great about this YouTube community in general. It's that, like, everyone wants to win because you'll never have the same review as somebody else.
Right.
You know, like there's no competition because it's like when you read or like want to learn about a book, you're not going to just look up one person's review. Like you want a collective, right? And so I think that's something that's super dope about what I've learned on my time on YouTube and just like as a person who's doing these reviews that I thought it was going to be like everyone's like out for each other's throats or, you know,
yeah.
But it's not like that, which I have come to appreciate.
Because there's a lot of attention and like, you just need a slice of that attention to make a lot of money and make a lot of opportunities. You do not need the whole BookTube on one person's page. Right.
Right.
So in the context of someone making a YouTube video about a book review, right? Like, again, our attention spans are low, are like small. Do you think the ability for someone to watch like a 15 minute review of just you talking about a book is contingent upon the way you break down the book, or is it like quirky figures of how you talk about it? Like, what is your style to get someone to care enough about you analyzing a book?
Yeah, I'm still working on that. I think I'm on the side of like, I know everyone's attention spans are very short. So I try to keep my videos under or at 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Or if it's like over probably max 12, because it's like, sometimes I don't even want to watch videos that are longer than 10 minutes, you know, like I'm watching videos when I'm like getting ready in the morning and I'm just like having it play in the background or something,
yeah.
you know?
Yep.
And so that's kind of my strategy because another component of YouTube, it's like not only subscribers, but it's more about watch time.
Yep.
So the longer that somebody is watching your videos, that's kind of where, you know, your ads and your revenue kind of comes from anyways. So that's kind of my strategy as at this point, because I'm not a quirky person. I don't do fancy editing. I don't like, you know, like I'm just not that type of person.
So you're really relying on the quality of your analysis to get to build an audience. It doesn't have to be a
quirky
video for you.
Yeah, that's definitely something I would say. It's that like I plan my videos a lot and like I think through a lot of the reviews. So especially when I'm doing book reviews, I consider all components. So I, you know, there's a Groupreads app. And so what I do is that I think through and read through like all the reviews of the book that I'm talking about and other people's reviews of it and then incorporate my own and like stylistically, how does it flow? Like what's most important when you're trying to figure out what book to read?
Right.
It's kind of my thing.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. I think we are gurning to the, I don't know what I said, gurning.
Gurning.
Trying to sound intellectual, a way of saying going towards the end. So I turned up with gurning. We're getting to the end of the podcast. I guess my last question is just like, and I think you've pretty much answered this, but like, is there any advice for a aspiring author, given that's your creative niche? You are an aspiring author, but you're like, you're grinding it out there. You're doing the shit that it takes to one day to get there. Do you have any advice for someone who's thinking of like, yo, I have stories, I want to write them, and how would I get it out there?
My advice is to just write. And I think that's such a basic thing to say, but like truly and really, you cannot produce a story. You can't produce anything unless you write. So I would say just write and stick, like make a schedule. I think one thing a lot of authors like, or like from what I've seen, don't talk about is the discipline aspect. So picking a time of day or like testing out what time of day or like when you want to write is important. I personally like writing right when I wake up in the morning. And so finding a time when you're able to write or just like when your writing is the best is probably important, because if I was writing at like 11 p.m. at night, I probably wouldn't enjoy that process as much as I'm like writing in the beginning of the day, you know?
Right.
So that's what I would say.
Okay. There it is. That is Christine Harris all the way from Berkeley. Warriors fan, but she should be a Lakers fan. But
no, I'm not even Warriors.
A LeBron fan. This COVID shit fucked up everything. So
Yeah, definitely did. I miss, it's crazy too, because my boyfriend was like, let's go to a Warriors game right before COVID. And that was like the last game that they played before everything shut down. And I was like, oh, we can go to the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just depressing.
All right. Well, that is Christine Harris. Thank you all for watching the Motivated by Mortality episode. Go check out her channel. It's Editorial Edge with Christine Harris. She does a ton of book reviews. I'm sure you'll find something there if you're interested in books, and you'll check it out. And yeah, we'll see you back next week on another episode of MBN.
Yes. Thanks, Amit, for having me.
Yep.
Bye.